This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Thursday, the 19th of July. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Tom Morgan. Tonight on the show, we talk to Andrea Whaling from La Trobe University as she discusses a new study being launched to gain a deeper understanding of the way that LGBTI communities utilise crisis services such as Lifeline. We also talked to Michelle Shepherd and Anastasia Lee about an upcoming initiative called The Real Big Hug, which aims to bring the LGBTIQ community together in solidarity and love after last year's plebiscite. And finally, we continue our coverage of the Thorn Harbour Health and ACON LGBTIQ Women's Conference last week as Miranda Sparks from Joy's own Gender Agenda speaks to Debbie Brennan from Radical Women Australia.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Dr. Andrea Whaling is a research fellow at the Australian Centre in Sex, Health and Society. She's conducting a survey through the La Trobe University to try and gain some insight into the way that LGBTI communities are using crisis support services. We hear from her now.
So the study is actually funded by Lifeline Australia, and they'd noticed that they don't get a lot of LGBTI Australians using their 24-hour crisis support services. So they wanted to know what they can do to be more LGBTI-friendly, what Australians are thinking about crisis support services, how they're using them or not using them, and what are some of the things that they can do to improve that, and also learn about best practice. So if LGBTI Australians are using other services like Switchboard and QLife, what are those programs doing well that Lifeline can learn from to kind of better improve their 24-hour crisis support. One of the things that really kind of drew me to this particular project was that kind of not evidence, but that kind of answer knowledge around why someone might not want to use a crisis support service. So things like if they're transitioning and they might not like the sound of their voice and feeling uncomfortable with talking on the phone, or not having a safe space to talk on the phone. There's a kind of assumption that everyone has access to a safe space to talk openly, either on the computer or via phone, and they might not be able to because it might require them to out themselves in some way that they might not be ready for, or not ever having the kind of privacy to do so. So I was really kind of curious around, what's happening for LGBTI people, why they might not use a 24-hour crisis support service, what's going on for them, and what can we actually do to improve that for the community.
So why is it important for someone, an organisation like Lifeline, to reach out to the LGBTI community?
In terms of crisis support, when we talk about crisis support and we're talking about 24/7, there's actually only a couple of services in all of Australia that offer that level of support, and that includes if you're on the phone and you're really feeling quite distress, that they can access services like ambulances, 000 to come to you. There's a number of really great LGBTI crisis support services like Switchboard and QLife, but unfortunately they haven't got the funding to do the 24-hour service. So for Lifeline, it's really about offering another option, because if you're in distress and you're not within that 3 p.m. to 12 a.m. time frame, what are you going to do? Are you going to wait until either 3 p.m. or 12 a.m. to access those services? You know, what's going to happen for you in that time? So I think with Lifeline, what they're really wanting to do is just be another option for people in case they can't access other service providers. From what I know, people might think that their particular crisis doesn't warrant that level of support. They might think it's not severe enough. And so they think, well, I'm not feeling so distressed, and I think that someone else might be feeling more distressed than me, and therefore they should be, I don't want to take their spot. So there's that kind of thinking. There's thinking that they might not be, that the kind of mainstream crisis support services might not be LGBTI friendly. There's a lot of anxiety around whether they've had appropriate training and understanding differences around sexuality, differences around gender, understanding the kind of unique needs of someone who might identify as trans and compared to someone who identifies as a gay man. So there's some anxieties around that as well. And I think access, there's a lot of, I think, limitations around access in terms of, you know, you need a phone to be able to use a crisis support service or have access to the computer or have access to the internet. And so there might be concerns around they might not have phone credit or they might not have access to the internet that's not in a public setting, that kind of thing. And I think those are kind of some of the anecdotal reasons why people might not use the services.
It's kind of heartening to see that larger mainstream organisations are actually going to this effort to actually say, okay, we've noticed a gap in the people using our services, and instead of just saying, oh, well, throwing hands up in there, actually actively trying to find ways around that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really great first step to kind of start seeing, okay, what are we not potentially doing well, and what can we do better to support the community? What are some programs we need to do, or what kind of training do we need to provide our caseworkers that might be on the phone lines? Like, what kind of advertising? You know, one of the things that we're noticing is that a lot of people don't even know what's available in terms of a crisis support service. So it's around how do you get your name out there, and also recognizing that a crisis support service doesn't just have to be for suicidal intentions. It can include if you're having a personal crisis or having a mental health crisis and you need just someone to talk to as well. I think it's all of that kind of stuff combined.
Because I think once you start looking into it, there is a lot of crisis within the community. There's a lot of homelessness. There's a lot of mental health issues. So it's really good that there is more and more options becoming available.
Absolutely. And particularly with the marriage plebiscite last year, that would have, you know, we know from some reports that are coming out now that, you know, feelings of distress and experiences of discrimination were quite high during that time. And it's really important that we kind of increase the services available to the community that they feel safe using, including mainstream services, and that they can feel I can call Lifeline or I can call Suicide Callback and they're going to understand what I'm going through and they're not going to dismiss my concerns or not be able to converse with me about what's happening in my life just because of my sexuality or my gender identity. Like, this is a really important little piece of research. It's a pilot study, but it's so important because it's kind of one of those first steps in kind of getting the sense around how people are or aren't using crisis support services. So I'd really like to encourage the community that if they've ever felt they needed to use a support service or they have used one, to please just take a few minutes to fill out the survey for us so we can kind of collect all that data and get a really good sense as to what are the next steps. I think in terms of practical outcomes, I would say things like how to change programs or changing the delivery of the kinds of services. So if there's, you know, if the survey indicates that there's some major, that people have had really bad experiences using crisis support services around, you know, discrimination or feeling that someone was too condescending or feeling that they weren't understood or there wasn't enough compassion, then it's really about going back to these workers and retraining them with their service delivery. It can be things around, like I said earlier, advertising the services. So it's just a lot of stuff around that they don't even know what's available and what they can use it for, like how they can use the service and whether their particular personal crisis fits the needs of what that service provides. There's that kind of, I guess, marketing and advertising as well. And just more generally, I think it's really important that mainstream services are also catering to the LGBTI community, that it shouldn't just fall on LGBTI community members to do all this work. Ideally, I think, you know, you want to be able to go to any kind of service and not have to feel that you're going to be discriminated against, or that they're going to be able to work with you and understand where you come from and who you are and your situation.
So tell us about the survey, how people can get it, how long it takes. I noticed there was some disclaimers around privacy, that sort of stuff, just so people feel safe enough to take it.
So the survey is an online survey. If you navigate to, we have a Facebook page called Understanding LGBT Lives in Crisis, and the link is there. Or if you're not sure, you can send Arches an email. We can send the link to you. Because it's a very long Qualtrics link, so trying to repeat that would be a bit of a nightmare. In terms of safety, everything is private and confidential. Everything is anonymous, so we don't keep any kind of tracking information, no IP address information, anything like that. All of your information is confidential when you fill out the survey. There is a secondary survey that you are asked to fill out if you'd like to participate in an interview. And that's not, that data is not stored with the survey data, so it's separate, and that is also kept. And all of our data is kept locked digitally in the on the Latrobe data storage servers. So everything's locked, everything's safe. Participants can take the survey and feel secure that it's quite confidential. This is a survey that's also been through not only Latrobe Ethics, but also through Acorn Foundation and Thorn Harbor Health, so it's gone through three layers of ethics approval as well to ensure that it's also meeting the needs of the LGBTI community. We've got a member of QLife on our reference group supporting this particular project that's really about stressing the kind of mainstream, trying to get mainstream services to kind of learn how to be much more LGBTI inclusive and friendly.
That was Chris Tate with Dr. Andrea Walling, a research fellow at the Australian Centre in Sex, Health and Society, discussing the survey via La Trobe University into the ways that LGBTI communities are engaging with crisis support services. If you would like to take part in the survey, please head to the Facebook page, Understanding LGBTI Lives in Crisis, and follow the links.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Michelle Shepherd and Anastasia Lee are presenters on Joy's Trans POV program and are part of an organising committee, including Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality Ro Allen, for an initiative called The Real Big Hug, which aims to bring the LGBTIQ community together and offer tips on self-care and nurturing after seeing the effects of the community of the same-sex marriage postal survey. We hear from them now.
My name is Michelle Shepherd, or better known as Mama Mish around these parts, a diversity consultant when I'm not in here.
Okay, my name is Anastasia, and I run a small restaurant in Sunshine. At the same time, I volunteer at Joy for Thorn Harbour Health, you know, giving the trans community a voice.
Yeah,
cool. So tell us about The Real Big Hug.
Well, thank you for emphasizing on The Real.
Well, I'll take it back to when, what I recalled. I had taken some time away to go and have top surgery. And around that time, we were dealing with the postal vote. We were dealing with the marriage equality debate. We were dealing with the, what else were we dealing with? Oh, we had the Better Together conference at the same time. And I remember I just got done having surgery and I went to a bar that we had for the Better Together conference. Yeah. And I remember sitting there speaking to Anthony and Ron.
Yeah.
And you yourself as well.
From Equalife, yes.
Yeah. Mm. And so I said to them, I said, you know, and I was a bit tired, and I said, I'm going home to the States, and I'm going home for Thanksgiving, which I was really looking forward to. And I said, you know what we really need to do? I said, we really need to have some kind of like Thanksgiving when this is all done for like the queer community, where we all can come together and just be thankful for each other and just forget about all the different pillars and just love each other. Hmm. And no big crazy flags, no big parades, just us.
Yeah. So, I met Commissioner Roy Allen at the Better Together conference. And I thought, you know what? Like, I think, and then, you know, because of the atmosphere at the Better Together conference.
Oh, that's the really, one I hosted, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it really pushed me towards your idea. Yeah. Like, I really wanted to make it happen because in that room, you could see so many differences amongst our own community, amongst the trans community. And at the same time, you don't have much like cisgender people attending or wanting to be part of it, of the trans discussion.
And we had a lot of bi people there, actually. And we learned through a lot of the discussions that we needed to have built better allyships, that we all needed to find ways of coming together. And we found that a lot of us within the trans community, myself, I identify as a bisexual person. And so we had a lot of talks there and realizing we need to come together better as allies and educate each other a lot better.
A lot of the time, people in our community, we listen to our own voices and our own anger and anguish and loss. Hmm. We don't really listen to each other.
No, we don't.
And that is what, you know, the broader community perceive us, all these angry, aggressive advocates, you know, and which is not healthy at all. So I thought, you know, the real big hug is a way for us to heal.
Yeah. And it was a way of understanding that, you know, we need to learn to sit down and actually listen a lot more and not so much speaking, but actually listening to one another. So gays listening to lesbians, lesbians listening to trans, gay, you know, all of that. Yeah. And we have things we get together. We always have, you know, midsummer, we have rally events we get together, or there's causes we're against, or we always come together for different things, but we kind of stick to our own. Yeah. And so something like this is no big parade, no bunch of crying, getting angry. It's all coming together, maybe some manicures, some pedicures,
some face painting, makeup.
You know, I'm working on a drag queen story corner for the kids, you know. And so it's just going to be a mellow, chill out day of just coming together. And we're talking about doing a massive big hug with everyone and a big photo of everyone just standing there in a big field and just hugging.
Yeah. And we have like, we set up the event with the conveyor of meditation and yoga as well. Like we have about like a 30 to like an hour of that you know, before we kick off the whole event. So I think it's very important. It's crucial because at the same time, I've been to so many community events, and a lot of people we know, like, all you can hear is like me and what I do. Mm-hmm. You don't really hear them asking how the other person is doing, you know, how are they taking care of themselves? How are they looking after their mental health, you know? And I think it's very important for you to care more to with other people.
And I think that's one thing I noticed when I came out, because I, obviously being privately bi and privately trans, I lived a heterosexual life. And when I'm coming in from a different pair of eyes to the LGBT community going, wow, everyone just kind of focuses on their own thing. You gays only work with gay issues, or trans work with trans issues, and everyone's saying, well, you don't understand me. We're going forward. If we're going to actually progress as a community, we need to remember why we're together with all of our letters, why our letters are there together in this massive string.
It's quite miraculous to see such a small talk between like the four of us just exploded into something now like out of scale, you know. And
but it's great to see all of us come together for something a little bit more chill, a little bit more different, where we're just hey, how are you going? Let's have a cup of tea and just hey, let's go sit on the lawn for a bit and just catch up, you know.
And especially like, you know, during the marriage debate, like the plebiscite, a lot of TIQ members of the community felt left out. And I think it's time for us to really pay more bit of attention to them. And of course, there would be our gay and our lesbians ally have been victimized through all of the aggressive some of us have done towards them. Like, you know, you're gay and you're lesbian, so you have the privilege now and so forth, which is not the case.
No. And we just want to basically get rid of all that.
Yeah.
Take a step back, reboot for a day, and come together as a community. Yeah.
So it sounds like it's kind of giving people permission to nurture themselves and nurture each other as a community.
Exactly.
So the whole point is, first of all, to let you heal your own wounds. Because a lot of the time, I've noticed that people from our community, we all carry our own personal losses. And secondly, to really amend the understanding we have on each other as well, and our own perception, because let's face it, there are still transphobic gays out there, and you know,
or transphobic lesbians, or transphobic bi, or people with biphobia, and there's just so much of that, and we just want to put all of that aside. We've had some time for settle things for marriage equality. Let's come together and just move on.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things people can expect out of the day? So I turn up to the real big hug. What am I turning up to?
Pilates.
Afternoon tea. There's manicures. There's, like I said, there's drag queen story time in one of the corners. It's just all of us coming together. I think we're having some few people playing some music as well.
I plan to, I'm organizing a story sharing group. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm just asking for the Mason Community Center to help me out with the idea. Yeah. It's like a human library where you just sit down and you listen to the other person's story. And
an afternoon tea as well.
Yeah, so things like that. The whole event goes for about 3 hours.
Yeah.
3 hours, yeah.
And being the LGBTI community, are you going to be catering for gluten-free and vegans?
Of course.
I'm particularly gluten-free. Anastasia comes every week with cakes. Yet to see a gluten-free cake.
I know I have been so unfriendly with your stomach, but I promise from now on I'm going to bring gluten-free and maybe like more conscious food for you.
So when, where, how, where can people find out more information? When's it going to be? How are we going to get there?
Okay, so it's going to be Sunday, the 5th of August.
Yep.
You can go to Facebook, and if you just Google in The Real Big Hug, you'll see all the information there. You can also get your ticket to Eventbrite. It's free. We just ask people to just basically sign up through there so that we can get a better idea of numbers and who's coming.
That was Michelle Shepherd and Anastasia Lee from Joy's Trans POV podcast, which can be found on your favourite podcast platform or at joy.org.au. The Real Big Hug is on Sunday, the 5th of August. And for more information on the event, head to their Facebook page, The Real Big Hug.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Last week, Miranda Sparks from Joy's Gender Agenda program attended the 4th annual Thorn Harbour Health and ACON LGBTIQ Women's Conference. While she was there, she spoke with Debbie Brennan from the Victorian chapter of Radical Women.
There was that really great quote from the Indigenous elder, Auntie Annette,
yep.
who said, "If you've come here to help me, no, but if you've come here to work through our struggle together, then, you know, welcome, let's work together." Which, I know, you definitely get the feeling of that today.
And, you know, that quote from Aboriginal leader Lilla Watson that you just cited, to me, that is the essence of solidarity. And solidarity is absolutely vital in our power and our power to actually change things, not necessarily tweak around the edges of a very, you know, oppressive system, but to actually change that system. I'm already getting a sense of the very strong feeling of connecting up issues. I think that that's a terribly, terribly important in our struggles, whoever we are, that our struggles are so interconnected, and so many people have already been saying that no one's, you know, liberation is possible without the liberation of others who feel the oppression of racism, as well as homophobia, transphobia, sexism, and so on. So wherever we fit into those oppressions, we're connected with each other. So that shows a great power there.
Absolutely. So you are here with Radical Women, mm-hmm. or, you know, like you're from Radical Women. For those of you who might not know, tell us what Radical Women's about.
Radical Women has been around for about 36 years now. It's a socialist feminist organization, and it's an organization that builds women's leadership. Mm. So it was founded back in the 60s, in those wonderful days of upheavals in, you know, the United States, where women who had been the movers and shakers of those movements going on in the United States at that time were still being treated as second class. And so it was founded by women who were sick of that, basically women who were sick of everything that everybody's sick of, you know, here today, and founded Radical Women as an autonomous organization for women to build our leadership, to become the leaders that we really are and can be, to then be going out there into those movements and show that leadership and give that leadership. So that's what Radical Women is. It's a women's leadership building organization. We're multi-sexuality, we're multi-gendered, we're multi-racial, we're all working class women, and it's a very exciting place to be.
And it's definitely something that we still need because we're still sick of it today. We still need leadership today. Why is Radical Women still important?
The importance of putting the theory with the practice. So our theory as socialist feminists and being very diverse ourselves is that it's the system, the private property profit, i.e. capitalist system, that is keeping us all down, whoever we may be. And that it wasn't always that way, and it certainly doesn't always have to be that way. And so when you have that theory of what it is that can change and the fact that it can be changed, if we were to build those vital movements led by those most oppressed by this system, then it is very important to still be around. And you can never get enough of that building of women's leadership to bring that change on. And we're talking about revolutionary change.
What are you looking forward to most while you're here?
I am most looking forward to not only, you know, hearing everyone, but more than anything, meeting people who are just as passionate about making change, who I can and Radical Women can be working together with in the future, because I can certainly see about 350 people who are absolutely revved up for shaking things up. And so I just want to shake things up.
It must be really heartening to see this many, not just women, but, you know, like non-binary and, you know, even men here, like really wanting to get into it.
Absolutely. That is so, so important, because while we are talking about women's leadership, it's not a women-only issue. It's about making that change alongside our brothers and our non-binary siblings, and that we all have a stake in this together, and we have to do it together.
That was Miranda Sparks speaking with Debbie Brennan from Radical Women Australia. Extended podcasts of the LGBTIQ Women's Health Conference panels, as well as the Gender Agenda, where you can find Miranda, can be found at joy.org.au.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Tom Morgan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.